Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the New Year's Eve 2014 broadcast of Italian Tomatoes. Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Italian Tomatoes. I'm your host, Bob Curie. It's New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2014. This is our New Year's Eve show, and what we're going to do tonight is to chat a little bit about some news of the past year, some events that are likely to happen in 2015, and we will definitely drop in for the ball drop in New York City. To call into the show, the number is 646-478-0004. That's 646-478-0004. The chat is open if you wish to participate in the chat. And I see a Cold Warrior in the chat and want to say hello to him and wish him and his family a happy new year. Obviously, it's New Year's Eve. People are partying, have company, have plans, so I don't know what kind of live participation we will have, but certainly it's always good when people drop into the show. Kind of my agenda for tonight, I titled the show Gatsby Markets and Sexagenarian Reflections, and I guess I'll explain that a little bit. The stock market, as people probably know, has been very hot this year, following an extremely hot year last year. The major indices for 2014 are up 11% and 14%, 11% for the Dow, 14% for the Standard & Poor's. And I think in 2013, the indices were up like 25 to 30%. So obviously, the stock market is sizzling hot, and that always, you know, brings to mind the 1920s and the go-go markets of those times. And the question naturally suggests itself, well, how long can it all last? Now, speaking of the 1920s, about a year ago, I did a show themed on the Great Gatsby and tying it into global warming. And the premise of that was the playground of the rich, where the Great Gatsby novel takes place, was actually formed during the ice ages of, I think, around 20,000 years ago, which sculpted the North Shore of Long Island, which is the setting of the novel, which is where I grew up. And I always like to make the connection between Gatsby, the classic novel, and global warming. Global warming made the locale of the novel possible. And Gatsby also took place in the 1920s, so which was the one of the great bull markets of all time. So it's all a natural tie-in. I like to remind people about that global warming aspect of the theme because, obviously, 20,000 years ago, there was no such thing as anthropomorphic or anthropogenic global warming. Whatever global warming took place was not caused by industrial carbon emissions emitted by human beings. So it also ties into my natural skepticism concerning the science, alleged science, behind global warming. So anyway, that was kind of the framework I wanted to start the show with tonight. And it doesn't hurt that there is cold weather all over the country. It's extremely cold in New York, where the New Year's Eve celebration is taking place. There is snow in Arizona, and it's cold over most of the country. So again, while climate is not the same as weather, the narrative that we were sold by the liberal establishment concerning global warming clearly is having more and more discordant notes in it, and that's always worth recalling at every opportunity possible. Want to check chat. I see we've got Aftermath Radio. I'm not sure who from Aftermath Radio is in the chat, so say hello to them. And before I take a call, I have to keep watch on the clock here because I have to go to the celebrations in New York at the right moment. One news theme that's surfacing already is the rehabilitation of Barack Obama. I mean, this began right after the election. The media is starting to cover him very favorably again. It covered his initiatives on Cuba and the executive amnesty in a very favorable light. It's constantly portraying him as being liberated by the loss in the election to do his own thing, unconstrained by political forces. And, you know, they just never stop. I mean, they always are going to keep shilling for this guy. And then there were a lot of news stories about how wonderful the economic growth statistic was of 5%, you know, and again, not providing the context that, yes, it was a strong quarter, but when you average it in with the quarter that it shrunk by 3%, you're probably going to come up with an annual growth average of 2.5%, which is right on consensus and not very strong for an economy that is supposed to be in full recovery. So in honor of our press corps, I thought I would play sort of a musical, what should be the musical accompaniment to every Barack Obama press release and press conference. So here goes.
Delight to be and right to be alive with you. Oh, isn't it heavenly? Just heaven on earth to be with you. No use concealing, you've been revealing my future hopes in your eyes. It's you I'm needing, for I've been reading my horoscope in your eyes. Oh, isn't it heavenly to go hand in glove with you, to to be so romantically and frantically in love with you. Oh, isn't it heavenly? Just heaven on earth to be with you.
Well, if I had my way, that would be played at every Barack Obama press conference, because that is the spirit with which the press is going to cover his final 2 years of office. And they're going to kind of sweep under the rug anything that's a discordant note compared to this narrative that they are creating of a liberated president now free to be above politics and to pursue right and justice and the American way, and contend with the obstructionist Republican Congress, and they'll forget ISIS and global conflict and American forces that are continually engaged in wars that were supposed to be over in a time of, quote, peace, unquote, brought by Barack Obama. They're going to forget Al Sharpton and race relations, structural unemployment, and the continual pain that's going to be inflicted by Obamacare. The narrative is going to be America is enjoying peace and prosperity finally achieved during Obama's last couple of years of office. Now, that's what they're saying now. The reality of a new Congress is I think going to throw cold water on this vision. I mean, December is kind of a fantasy land in the political world. The president, especially this president, goes on vacation for forever. Congress goes, ends its session and they all go home. And I don't think it's quite dawned on the liberal Democrats and the press that tends to support them what it means to have the full powers of a fairly hostile Congress and its investigative power directed at the administration. And we're going to really get, I think, an illustration of that in the months to come. So looking at the chat, I see some people dropping in, Rich Disney and Steve Foley, hello to them. We're going to go to New York in a few minutes and listen to the broadcast from the Times Square. But I'm going to recognize my callers. Area code 775, who are you?
Yes, this is Rich Disney.
Oh, hey, Rich, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Rich Disney is one of the co-hosts of Free Fire Friday, a show that is a new show to Aftermath Radio, which deals with anything related to guns. People who are big Second Amendment people or like firearms and like to hear firearms talked about, check that out. It's on Blog Talk Radio every Friday night. The host, Johnny Kempen, is a very funny guy. You will enjoy listening to him, and of course to Rich too, who keeps him in order. And
I'm kind of the Ed McMahon, though.
Well, for context, Johnny is a retired Army NCO, and Rich, I think you were both enlisted and an officer in your military career, so. There's a certain play of that theme on that show also. Which,
well, as usual, the NCO, Johnny Kempen, is really in charge. So that's
exactly. So people who tune in will find that entertaining. And well, the whole show is very entertaining. Like I said, I know very little about firearms. I took one gun course in my whole life, and the takeaway I came from that is, man, it's easy to have an accident with these things.
Right, yeah, training. It's good.
So I'm all for Second Amendment freedoms, but I am even as strongly for the concept that if you're going to exercise them, you need to know what you're doing. So, and I want to recognize the redoubtable cold warrior. Let me put him on. Say hello.
Hi there.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. Trying to stay
warm. Is it snowing in your part of the woods? Because I saw on Drudge Report that there's snow in Arizona.
Well, I'm sure it's snowing up north in the mountains, but down here in the Phoenix area, we haven't dipped under the freezing point yet, and I don't think we will here for the next few weeks. But we came very close the last few days.
Yes, that global warming is, you know, it's taking a toll. I hope you're, you know, putting sandbags around your property to protect against the rising oceans, you know. It's going to happen any day now. For our listeners, Cold Warrior is one of the movers and shakers in the movement to get people engaged with the Republican Party at the precinct level. And you'll find him blogging at Unified Patriot on Red State and on Precinct Project .us. I'm remembering that right, explaining how the guts of the Republican Party work. You know, CW, I almost posted, and I decided not to because I just didn't have the time in the, you know, stop clock is right twice a day department. John McCain was really going after the administration over his appointments to the ambassadorships of Hungary and Argentina. The appointee to Hungary was a soap opera producer and star who, you know, great achievement was to bundle hundreds of thousands of dollars for the Democratic Party. And, you know, and I was, it was kind of interesting and, you know, refreshing and unusual to see McCain be so vigorous in attacking the administration, because usually he's more vigorous in attacking his fellow Republicans. So I just thought I'd share that with you. Hey, Steve, if you want to call in, feel free. Like I said, the chat is open. If people want to participate in the chat, and the call-in number is 646-478-0004, and the show is also, you can also dial in on Skype, apparently. I'm not very familiar with Skype, but that capability does exist within the Blog Talk Radio platform. So it's nearly 10 to the hour. See if I can get my... Oh, yeah, I want to make a couple of remarks on the markets again. Like I said, they were really strong in 2014. The major indices returning over 10%. And in 2013, they did in the 30% range. So you've had a very extended period of strong performance. Now, we all have to look at our investments and evaluate them according to where we are in the life cycle. And, of course, the closer you are to retirement, the bigger the question is whether you can deal with the volatility that goes with investing in stocks. And we had a brief illustration of that volatility in October, where stocks plunged 10% within a very short period of time due to, you know, a whole series of unsettling economic news, including the Ebola scare. So as you evaluate that, you know, just consider where are you in your kind of life cycle that, yes, the best long-term return has been in the stock market, but if a downswing occurs as you get close to retirement, it's very problematic to make that up So you have to decide your asset allocation accordingly. Now, this is, we don't give investment advice on this show, but after the extended bull markets that we have had, you know, the odds are that the correction is more likely to happen than not to happen. And, you know, the plain vanilla garden variety market correction is about 25%. If it's a serious bear market, if that develops, it can be 40, even 50%. So you have to assess your risk tolerance in light of the possibility that declines of that magnitude can occur. And let's see, I think I'm going to go, unless anybody has anything they want to say, I think I'm going to go to the final 10 minutes of the ball drop, and then we'll be back when it's officially New Year's Eve, I mean New Year's Day, in New York. I'm from New York originally. Like I said, I grew up on Long Island. I was a corporate relocatee to Texas with American Airlines, and I'm retired now, but I'm still kind of, my point of reference for big holidays is New York time. I'll use Central Time if it makes it more convenient for my schedule, so whatever. It's kind of an opportunistic attitude towards the clock and the calendar. So anyway, we're going to go to New York and listen to the goings-on with the Times Square crowd. I don't think one person could pass a sobriety test in this crowd.
want you, I want me, and I want peace. Thank you for making this a dream come true.
Thank you.
watched and survived another New Year's at Times Square. And the reason I wanted to listen to the whole New York, New York thing, that's a personal thing, just to explain that a little bit. Like I said, I retired from American Airlines after a 34-year career there, and I was a corporate relocatee with them. They moved from New York to Texas in 1979, and a whole bunch of us from New York came down to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And the late 1970s was a party decade, and all of us relocatees were stranded and had a lot of time on our hands. So we were out a lot at night at the local watering holes, and they always made a point of playing that song to cater to the airline crowd. So in addition to its New Year's connotation, it has some personal connotations for me. Okay, so let's see. We've got Rich is still with us, and we've got some folks in chat. So I'm going to go on with my remarks. This is not going to be a heavy show. It's going to be kind of lighthearted. I'm going to play some clips and chat about a few other things. And if anybody, you know, wants to call in, once again, the number is 646-478-0004. If you have called in and want to say something, just get your opening and say it. No real structure tonight. I'm going to kind of ramble, which is, I think, appropriate on New Year's Eve. The next subject I want to cover, and that's to play a humor clip, really, is Obamacare. I do part-time tax preparation, so I've had to spend a lot of time learning about Obamacare and the individual mandate. And for people getting their taxes done for 2014, if you are in, well, actually, if you got insurance through the exchanges, you have two new forms to look forward to, and which you'll have to pay your preparer to do. There is the 8962, which is a new IRS form, which tracks the subsidy that you got from the government to buy your Obamacare policy. That subsidy is based on your income, and it has to be, what happens is when you applied for Obamacare on the exchange, you had to provide an estimate of your income, and that estimate determined your subsidy. Now, a true-up has to be done on your tax return, so that if you earned more income than you estimated, you'll have to pay the government back. And if you earned less income than you estimated, then you get an extra tax credit. So that process takes place on Form 8962. Your insurance provider is going to send you a Form 1095A, which will list month by month the coverage that you had and who in your tax household was covered. So that's going to go into the reconciliation that's done on the Form 8962. And if you did not have coverage for any period in 2014, then you will have to do the individual mandate tax calculation, which is done on Form 8965. And that's a month-by-month calculation. There are hardship exemptions that are available, but if you do not have health insurance for the entire year of 2014, you are probably going to have to pay a tax. That tax equals $95 per individual, $47.50 for children, each child, or 1% of your income after deductions, whichever is greater. So that's actually pretty complicated, isn't it? And that's just a very general a very general description. So in honor of Obamacare, I thought it would be fitting to play, I love these Johnny Carson classics that can be found on YouTube. In honor of Obamacare and in honor of Michelle Obama's obsession with people controlling their weight, I'm going to play a classic little Carson clip, which is the Art Fern Tea Time movie character advertising a weight loss program.
Thank you, friend. Hi there, feature film freaks. Art Fern here today with today's feature film with Rosemarie, Rosemary Clooney, Rosemary Woods, Woody Allen, Marty Allen, Alan Bursky, and Chomp the Wonder Beaver in Escape from the Planet of the Rabbis. But first, friends, are you fat? Are you obese? Are you disgusting? Is your body so bad you have to wear prescription underwear? When you go swimming, do you have to get permission from the harbor master? Are you so fat that when you fall over, you don't even notice it? Then we've got something to help you with your body. Yes, it's our matinee lady. Friends, she'll give you something to slim down for. You may not believe this, but when I first met her, I weighed 280 pounds. Believe me, she gave me a reason to whack off a few pounds. She gave me about 24 reasons, but we won't go into that now. Friends, take off those extra ugly pounds with Fat Watchers. That's right, folks. The only planned program that provides you with a motivation to lose fat. I mean, besides the matinee lady. In fact, what is our slogan at Fat Watchers, matinee lady?
Fat, fat, the water rat.
That's right. Fat Watchers provides motivation. For you fatties, the motivation is the absence of ridicule. Now, friends, we know that other plans involve weekly meetings to encourage you sticking to your diet. We have meetings like that, too, but ours go further. Ours involve actual hurting.
But there are some people who really like that sort
We'll of talk thing. About that later. Come to Fat Watchers, where we treat emergency cases by sending a semi-doctor to your house and surgically removing your belly right on your kitchen table. And as a bonus, we roll your fat into a beach ball and give it to your kids as a gift.
Can you do that?
Not me. The semi-doctor does it. Fat Watchers, where we teach you to enjoy your fat while you have it. By teaching you the joys of playing roller derby with a late model Buick. And show you how to get laughs by falling on small people. Where we show you how to redistribute your weight.
Oh, not me, you don't.
I know that. And at Fat Watchers, we supply you with all the food you need, and that's a terrific plan. You know why? Because we make a fortune on it, you fat Timmies.
We really do. We make a fortune. I have seen the actual figures. We make so much money.
Oh, cool it, matinee lady. Fat Watchers food featuring the dietary chocolate pudding. Let's see that. All righty, here it is. Ooh. Right here. The dietary...
Okay, well, that was a classic Johnny Carson skit, Art Fern plugging Fat Watchers, and obviously that is meant in humor. But in reality, I mean, I think when you look at the practical operation of these Obamacare plans with their very steep deductibles and increased premiums and co-pays, and their restrictive lists of in-network providers, you are going to see a general decrease in access to care. And I think that that phenomenon is going to result in very unfortunate health care outcomes because the system was so concerned about what happens at the high end of medical bills that they kind of took their eyes off the ball about the ability of people to pay routine medical bills, and these deductible premium levels are such that it is really going to discourage people from getting the care that they need, and that is going to have a lot of unfortunate consequences. So Obamacare, I think this is going to be roiling the public square. I'm looking at some chat comments. This is going to be roiling the public square for years. I don't think Obamacare can be repealed unless it's extremely skillfully done. I think it has to be restructured and privatized, basically. That's kind of my inkling about it right now. But, you know, we're very early in the policy game and in the new Congress, so we will see the approach that they take towards health care. But Obamacare as written, I think, is just an unacceptable outcome for the American people, and it has got to be very drastically operated on, surgically restructured. Maybe that's the best word for it.
You know, it was kind of genius that the real bite of Obamacare won't really hit until the final year of Obama's presidency anyway.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that was all deliberate, you know. It was all crafted to make it, you know, have all the, you know, good or at least painless pieces hit first and delay all the pain until later. The big pain, of course, is going to be the tripling of the individual mandate tax from the 2014 level to what it's going to be in 2016. And then, of course, you know, death by regulation. I was reading some articles that people who signed up for Obamacare on the exchange in 2014, but who found an alternative off the exchange in 2015, are not being allowed to drop their policy. It's kind of like once you're in it for good. Now, whether the government will successfully get away with that, I don't know, but that's what they're trying to do.
Right. You can check out, but you can never leave.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very, politically, it can be good and bad. I mean, the disgust with Obamacare is not some political wave that comes, crests, and then goes away. Obamacare is going to be an issue 2015. It's going to be an issue in 2016. People will continue to hate it because the practical operation of it reduces the access to health care for anybody who's unfortunate enough to be stuck with it. Now, if you're a rich person and premiums don't matter to you, then Obamacare is wonderful because you finally have the removal of a lifetime cap on insurance benefits. And if you have assets to protect, that is a very valuable thing to have. But most people are not in that boat. They're in the other boat. They can only afford a few thousand dollars a year on medical expenses. And if you have premiums of $5,000 and deductibles of $5,000 for, let's say, a family of two, you can't make your household budget balance. It's as simple as that.
So once again, liberal progressives are hurting the exact constituency they promote or they purport to help, and they're helping the exact constituency they purport to be against.
Absolutely. You know, the stock market all over again. I mean, you know, where did the porculus, the stimulus, the quantitative easing, where has it all gone into? It's gone into stock prices that benefiting people who own equities, which by definition are, you know, the upper income strata of the population. Go figure.
Well, I guess to the lower echelon, they're already on welfare. They're already getting everything for free. So it's not hurting them. Again, it's just pinching the middle class, pushing more of the middle class into the lower class.
Well, it's pinching the middle. It's absolutely pinching the middle class. But I think what you're also going to see now is there's going to be some pinching of the poor, too, because the government is cutting its Medicaid reimbursements, and doctors are dropping out of the Medicaid system. So for the poor, they don't have to worry about premiums and deductibles, but they do have to worry about actually seeing a doctor because doctors don't have to take Medicaid. And if that's
well,
the
Paul,
only
the
game in town.
Well,
yeah.
I would say the working poor who are just getting, you know, they're striving to be, or they're in the lower echelon of the middle class, they're getting taxed an extra big tax for working to subsidize health care for those who are not. Again, you know, yet another subsidization of the non-working by the barely working.
It's crazy. I mean, again, you know, this legislation, maybe it looked good on paper when it was rammed through on Christmas Eve in 2009, for those who remember that sordid episode. And I think it was
that
it happened. But man, when you see it in practice and look at the encyclopedia of rules and regulations and caveats and how many places you can get ensnared by this crazy system, it's just mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling.
Well, it's like a whole new tax code. It's a whole new code, but for healthcare.
Yeah, it's a tax code, but for healthcare, absolutely. So it's nuts. And unfortunately, for people who are self-insured, well, the worst of it is going to hit the people who got their insurance on the exchanges. People who bypass the exchanges will be spared. Well, they'll be spared the bureaucratic snafus. But when you buy insurance off the exchange, you're not entitled to the subsidy. So you get hit with the higher costs. If you're in a corporate plan, the impact will be muted for a while. It remains to be seen how aggressively the government is going to try to change those corporate plans to be more in conformity with the Obamacare standards, but that is all yet to unfold.
Do you know anything about, like, for example, my state? I live in Nevada. Nevada, the governor, Republican Governor Sandoval, decided to go along with the state exchange. But then it went completely sideways, and a bunch of people signed up with the Nevada State Exchange. They even paid for advertising through the end of this year. So even though it was debunked or it was gone as a program in October, they still have commercials on it telling people, yeah, now you can get insured through the Nevada Exchange, insurance, because they paid it all the way through the year.
And
what happens to a person who signed up on the Nevada Exchange and it goes away?
Yes, I don't know what, you know, if the exchange disappears, people have to go to the private market, private exchanges, and buy their policy there if they want to avoid the mandate tax. But if you don't go through an exchange, you don't get the premium tax credit. So you don't get the subsidy. So
it's in the gray area, because the states without a state exchange, people are supposed to go to the federal, you know, the federal website or whatever. But Nevada said this. The same thing's happening in Oregon and I think several other states that said, oh, yeah, we're going to set up a state exchange. And then it just completely went upside down. It just bankrupted. Just not even enough workers to work the system.
Yeah. So I don't know if they go through the federal exchange. I don't know if they can go through the federal exchange if there is, in theory, a functioning state exchange. I mean, that's something that the regulators will have to determine, that if you're living in Nevada or one of these other states that has a broken-down exchange, can you buy it on the federal exchange? And I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. I don't either.
But there are, you know, the insurance and benefits industry is setting up a sort of parallel distribution network that people can call and see if they can get their coverage. But again, if you get the coverage out of the exchange, state or federal, you don't get the subsidy. And for many people, the subsidy is the only way that it's affordable. So it's a catch-22.
Right. I heard some people, like, you know, several hundred people now. Nevada is a small state. There's only about 3.5 million people in the whole state. But several hundred people actually went to the Nevada Department of Insurance and reported this whole thing, this whole government exercise as fraud, as a bait and switch. Because it really is. It really is. So the State Department of Insurance has formal written complaints for fraudulent activity by the Nevada State Exchange.
That's an amazing set of facts. I don't know what to say about that.
Well, the Department of Insurance is like, they're not doing anything. They're not going to investigate themselves, essentially. You know, they're not, they're there to go after evil private insurance companies that bait and switch or defraud their clients, right? Their customers.
Right.
Okay, well, what do you do when the state itself is the major defrauder and bait and switcher of its supposed customers and voters? And
yeah, I mean, that's what makes the whole thing such a nightmare. And, you know, I don't know what the status of people who, you know, paid through the state exchange to get coverage, did they get their money back? Or do they have a policy?
No, actually, some are still having their money taken, withdrawn from their bank account.
Oh,
my God. From an exchange that no longer technically exists.
Do they have an active policy, or do they know whether they have one or not?
Well, they're not covered. That's the thing. Now all the doctors are saying, "Well, it's gone. I know I'm not going to get paid by a defunct." That's the word I was looking for before. A defunct exchange.
Yeah.
So, no, it's not accepted anywhere. People are still getting hundreds of dollars a month sucked out of their bank account. They go and report it to the Department of Insurance of the state. The Department of Insurance says, I don't know what to do.
Well, you know, practically speaking, the only thing that those people, you know, I don't know.
I know. I mean, it's just it's an exercise in futility all around. It's a circular. I can't use the words on the radio, but, you know, it's a circle. You know what?
Right. Exactly. You know, if I had, you know, I'm covered by a corporate retirement plan, which, you know, hopefully will continue until I go on Medicare, and then the death panels will get me, I guess, or something. But if that option did not exist, I would not. My decision was I would not get insurance through the federal exchange. I would get it on the private market, and all right, so I don't get the subsidy. I wouldn't get that much anyway, and it's not worth the control that it gives the government over you. But, you know,
right.
I have the ability to make a decision like that. A lot of people don't, and that's why it's so outrageous that this thing was sold as a benefit to the middle class. And there are so many people getting screwed left and right by it.
It's not necessarily that it was sold to the middle class. It's that the middle class believed it in large part. That's what I don't understand. I mean, I knew this was going to be screwed up, you know, in 2008 when Obama was criticizing Hillary for her plan in the primaries. And then Obama pretty much did the same plan she was talking about penalizing people who can't afford the insurance anyway.
Oh, yeah. He was so opportunistic in 2008. He ran to Hillary's right on a lot of things. Healthcare was one of them, and some cultural issues, too. You know, he cast himself as a proponent of educational reform, and he said, no, we shouldn't have gay marriage and this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, Hillary's health care was too socialistic, blah, blah, blah. And, I mean, the guy is just a very accomplished deceiver.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, he's everything he says. I don't know of anything he said that is not a lie. I mean, definitely many, many, many more lies than truths he's uttered as president or just before.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. So I don't know the answer to that question, and Bob Montgomery in chat, I don't believe there will be delays in the IRS never delays in collecting revenue. I mean, I could be wrong about that, but I've heard no news about delaying because they had their funding reduced. And you still have to file your taxes. And if you underpay, yes, you will be penalized. It may be unfair, but, you know, the confusions in the law and the insurance industry and whatever are not going to absolve you of your payment liability if you do not have health insurance. So we are stuck with a very flawed system. That is going to cost a lot of people a lot of money, either in taxes or insurance or both, and it is also going to result in reduced access to care. I mean, it is a terrible outcome, but that's the outcome we got. And I don't see much happening, even with a Republican Congress. The Republican Congress can investigate it and expose it and highlight it and make solutions to fix it, pass legislation to fix it, but that legislation is going to be vetoed, so we're going to be stuck with this nutty system for 2 years unless enough Democrats get so worried about the impact on their 2016 prospects that they will be willing to not support a presidential veto. And that is a very problematic outcome. I would be very surprised if that happened. So, yeah. It's,
right, I doubt that will happen.
Yeah, I doubt it will happen.
You know, I'm reading Bob Montgomery's comment, and it's just strange how the government somehow when it comes to tax collection, actually pulling the money in, it's amazing how well the government prioritizes that effort.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it'll always, no matter how much they're cut, and they'll scream and holler, and, oh, we can't do this service for you. But, man, they always seem to have enough agents to collect.
Yeah, there will be no reduction in the IRS's ability to collect tax revenue, regardless of what complications there are that result in the tax system from all these insurance issues.
Right. Or
trust
seize
me.
Assets of old ladies. Seize assets of old ladies who happen to make cash deposits under $10,000 at a time.
It's now that's one thing that if the Republican Congress gets its act together, they can focus a lot of public attention on all of these abuses and propose fixes in both houses of Congress, which will force the president into the, you know, politically unfavorable position of vetoing legislation to fix all these IRS issues. I mean, you know, that's worth doing, even if the legislation doesn't pass. But for relief for, you know, John Q. Public, it's not going to happen until there's a new president.
Right. Now, the one thing they could do, but I don't think they're going to do with the present Republican leadership, with Boehner, you know, and Senate Majority Leader now, McConnell. That's
McConnell.
They're just not strong enough to do, like, and I'm not a fan of Newt Gingrich, but one thing he did effectively with Clinton was he kind of got a bully pulpit in a way and made the president look bad if he didn't sign off on things, and Clinton put his finger in the political wind and said, yeah, I better go along with it.
The trouble with the reason why that parallel is not likely to work with Obama is he doesn't think like a Bill Clinton.
Right. Yeah, you're right. He's an ideologue.
Himself a transformational figure that's above all of that. The Obama people look at the Clintons as pragmatists and sellouts, and they just don't compromise like that. It's not instinctive for them. They'll do it occasionally, but there has to be a real stick behind the Republicans at that bargaining table, or he's just not going to do it. Now, maybe they start saying, hey, you know, we think it's time to review the presidential retirement package, and, you know, maybe you shouldn't get all these allowances with the economy so bad.
Maybe you shouldn't get lifetime Secret Service protection.
Yeah, lifetime Secret Service. Maybe we cut down on your office allowance. Maybe some
subtle things like
a law that makes it easier to investigate the executive branch employees once you're out of office. Blah blah blah. You know, who knows? But by nature, Obama is not a compromiser.
Nope.
Yeah, so it's...
By nature, he's not an athlete either, but the pressure made him seem like one, huh?
he's a golfer, I'll give him that.
No, he's a crappy golfer. I mean, according to Michael Jordan and others that have played with him, he's like a pretend golfer. But
54 times this year.
Yep.
You know? If he's doing it for social reasons, he's got a good social life because he does it often enough.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's crazy stuff.
But he's great at basketball, too. Didn't you know that? I mean, it's like, you know, before he ran, and I don't know how politically correct, it's an unpolitically correct comment, but I called him. He looks like Urkel. And he looked like Urkel to me when he was running, you know, before he won the first election. And that's how his athleticism is. It's completely in tune with an Urkel character. You know, they totally painted this picture of propaganda that makes it, oh, my gosh, he's so astute at athletics. You know, it burns me, but whatever.
Yeah, Obama, I mean, so much of it is a complete fantasy life that the guy has led. When he first came to public attention, there was this compulsion in the Democratic Party and in the media to pump him up into something so much bigger than what he actually was. And that sort of fantasy life has just existed throughout his presidency, too. He is touted for achievements that, you know, don't happen, and he's praised for decisiveness and, you know, executive acumen. And, like, you look at his administration, it's, you know, one screw-up after another, and yet he's supposed to be this decisive leader who has a handle on things. And I think that the... you know, athleticism ascribed to him falls into that category. He's living a fantasy life, but so are the people that are pumping him up.
Right. It's the Obama administration is the JV team.
Yeah.
they're in power, but it's very North Korean-esque or Stalin-esque how the press willingly, not under control of the government, but the major press is and has been and still is pumping this guy up, and now that things are completely failing. Now, this is something I am very, very, well, not very, very, but I'm glad he won a second term, because I don't think things would be that much different with Romney. I think Romney's a better, just regular, more real guy, actually. But now Obama owns it. And if Romney had won, and I'm not a Romney fan at all, you probably knew that. I mean, he's my last pick among the primary guys, probably maybe just above McCain or somebody like that. But, you know, Obama can't – everything would have been blamed on Romney. It was almost planned that Obama would not win a second term, if you remember. You know, it was like everything was kind of engineered, so the pain of Obamacare, all these results of the policies of Obama would really hit during a supposed Romney administration. But now Obama fully owns this. I mean, he owns it for history now.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. You know, I'm not a big fan of I liked Romney as a person, but I would not be very happy to have him as a nominee again in 2016.
Right.
I mean, I think
we have to
up our game considerably.
Right. Well, let's hope so.
And the idea of Jeb Bush as a substitute for Romney, you know, leaves me absolutely cold. And that's probably going to be the subject of another show. You know, I do like the Bushes. I think they're a very public-spirited family, you know, very distinguished record of service and all of that. But there are, I don't know, there are cultural reasons why I don't think they're a Bush, another Bush as a nominee will work. And I don't think, and if he's fortunate enough to win, I don't think he'll have a good presidency either. And, you know, just to give my thumbnail sketch on that, you know, the Bushes were raised in this patrician, white Anglo-Saxon culture, elite culture, that's kind of a relic of a bygone age. Maybe it's unfortunate that it's a relic of a bygone age, but they just don't have the aptitude for the kind of energetic fighting that you have to do in politics today. It's just not there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, George H.W. Bush didn't have it. George W. Bush didn't have it. Jeb Bush doesn't have it. You know, we need somebody who is going to be more engaged with the public, more of a fighter, more connected with middle America. You know, that could be a Perry, it could be a Walker, it could be a Jindal. I don't know who it's going to be, but it's not Bush, and it's not Romney.
Right.
So,
yeah, Romney's another one that's kind of from that patrician thing. But when you think about it, despite the propaganda about Obama, I mean, he's lived a very privileged life, very elite life. I mean,
oh,
Columbia
absolutely.
University, Harvard, you know, he went to the most expensive private school in Hawaii. You know, the guy's been, you know, the tutelage of Bill Ayers, I forgot the mentor of Obama, you know, the communist, the full-on communist guy, his mentor.
Yeah, well, there was Ayers. I'm not sure who else you were thinking about.
I'll find it.
Yeah, that doesn't come to me. But you're right. I mean, Obama went to
Marshall Davis.
Oh, yeah. Well, there are all sorts of rumors about that, which we won't go into. Obama went to expensive private high school. He went to expensive colleges and grad school. You know, his identity as a community organizer was acquired through marriage and not very credible. He has lived a life of relative privilege, and he has a lot of liberal Democrats working off a lot of liberal guilt, who are very heavily invested in him, and they made his career without him having to compile much of a track record of achievement. And that's how he got to where he got.
Yeah,
now, fortunately,
they elected him and promoted him based on the color of his skin rather than the content of his character. Because
fortunately
nobody knows what
for
the
Republicans, that is never going. There will never be another first black president again, and even the first woman president isn't going to get the free ride that he got, which is going to make 2016 a lot more competitive, especially since the continuing pain of Democratic policies will keep occurring through 2015 and 2016. So. You know, I think that we really do have a shot at winning, if we nominate a winner, but Jeb Bush doesn't strike me as being a winner, neither does Romney. We need to look elsewhere.
Yeah, isn't that funny how Democrats or liberal progressives in general run masterful campaigns and masterful propaganda that just completely dupes everybody, but the reality and the pain of their policies always kicks them in the butt in the end.
Yeah, well, you know,
that's the only thing that saves.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, that's very true, and you're actually seeing that in microcosm in New York. New York is like a kind of little Petri dish for the Democratic Party at large. Now, what happened in New York, the recovery that the city had under Giuliani and Bloomberg, New York got very lucky because with the 3-to-1 Democratic registration, you would normally expect Democrats to be in charge in New York most of the time. Now, what happened was, for a number of reasons, when Mayor Dinkins was in office, the city's joblessness and crime got very bad because of the recession that occurred at the time, and Wall Street was pulling back, and Dinkins just did not have the street smarts to run a city as complex as New York. So what happened is a fluke. Enough people got upset to put a liberal law and order Republican, Giuliani, in office. And then, you know, Giuliani had 8 successful years. And then the trauma of 9/11, the city turned to a Democrat who lived in the real world, Michael Bloomberg, who decided to run on the Republican ticket and bring business acumen to City Hall. So Bloomberg comes in, and yes, he was a liberal, he was a nanny stater, but he lived in the real world, very conscious of the city's need for security and economic growth. So for 20 years, New York City escaped the natural consequences of what would have happened had they elected the conventional liberal Democrats, and their luck ran out. And they elected a real big-time lefty. And in 1 year, that guy has done so much damage. And I think that is a metaphor for the Democratic Party at large. You know, the Clintons, there are a lot of things to dislike about the Clintons. But Bill Clinton was a pragmatist, and he was friendly to economic growth. So he never went off the deep end the way a lot of liberal Democrats do in the policy area. Well, the Democrats' luck ran out, too, in 2008. They got exactly what they wanted or said they wanted. And, you know, look where they are 6 years later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Republicans have the biggest congressional contingent that they've had in, what, 70, 80 years?
Right.
And the only one
who can screw this up is the Republicans, who always seem to screw themselves up.
Yeah.
Run the unmasterful campaign and screw everything up and then leave things alone, and it usually recovers. You know,
yeah.
Not from any genius moves by the Republicans. It's just they don't mess with stuff nearly as much as liberal progressives.
Yeah, the Republican Party, you know, the real danger there, and it's getting worse because the establishment did get stronger this election. I mean, I don't have anything against establishment Republicans per se, but they have to be effective in governance, and I don't think that they have been very much under Obama. They were not an effective opposition. I'm hoping they become more effective. But that kind of chamber of commerce, go along to get along mentality is very tempting for them. And they, you know, need to realize that just because they won the Congress doesn't mean the battle is over. You know, you can't go back to reaching across the aisle until there is a real shakeout on the policy front. So, yeah, I'm a little worried about the fortitude intestinal of the Republican leadership. But we will see. I mean, we will see. I mean,
right.
You know, the Senate is very different from the House. And, you know, with it under Democratic control, I mean, you know, there really is not all that much you can do if you only have one House. Now, we'll see what they do. I mean, they're really running out of excuses if they are not effective.
Right. Well, one good thing, I try to look on the bright side, is we won't have to talk about gun control probably for the next 2 years at least.
Well, you know, I that's an interesting subject because, yeah, I mean, on the federal level, probably not. But you still have to worry about the courts. And,
right, well, you always have to worry about the courts. You're right.
And then, of course, you have to worry about what happens in the liberal states, like, you know, Connecticut and New York and California. And, you know, from your show, you've had guys call in who live in those states, and that's kind of interesting because the impression
New
I get
Jersey.
Yeah, is that, you know, from listening to your show and then also reading a little bit on the internet, is that there is a massive amount of noncompliance with those laws that have been passed in the more liberal states. And then, of course, there is the perennial problem that the criminals always have guns.
Right, right, right. They don't. They,
no,
yeah,
in New York, Connecticut, and California, it is not a problem.
Right, right. They don't. Well, no. I mean, criminals love gun control. It makes their, you know, their workplace environment safer.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, there is stuff to worry about. There is stuff to worry about, regarding.
Sure, and I agree with you. I agree with you. There's still stuff to worry about. But on the bright side, here's some bright side stuff. The Supreme Court, anyway, has made, you know, on the good news. Think of this. I mean, and I'm 46 years old. I don't know. I know you said you're retired, but I mean, I remember when there were like one or two states where you could get a concealed weapons permit somewhat easily. Okay, and you're talking to I'm a man who had in high school in California. Now, I was on the trap team. I mean, my high school in Northern California. I brought a Remington 870 870 shotgun to high school twice a week to shoot on trap club after school. Okay, now it would be a felony, you know. At University of California at Davis, I was on the pistol team. So I had a permit to carry a concealed weapon and a special permit to carry on school grounds before I was 21. Okay, that's how much things have changed in the last 30 years. I went there in like 87 to 90, so at Davis. But so things have changed bad in some ways, but then again, there are now, what, 38 states where it's very easy to get a concealed weapons permit? I don't know. I mean, there have been some.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I understand where you're coming from, and you're absolutely correct. I would say that what the big risk that we have on the federal level comes in 2016 with the ability of whoever becomes president to appoint more justices to the Supreme Court. Because,
right.
You know, I mean, some of the decisions, I don't know what the gun decisions are, 5-4, 6-3.
Five, four.
Yeah. You know, 5-4 is not a very comfortable margin. And, you know, if a Democrat gets in, just the actuarial profile of the existing court means in the first term of that Democrat, they could appoint two or three justices, and you know that could change the ball game for, you know, big time.
Yeah. Well, the thing is though, Ginsburg. I mean, we could talk about the Supreme Court too. Who are the oldest ones? Ginsburg is probably going out first, so she's already a super liberal. You're not going to get someone much more liberal progressive than she is. Who else? Kennedy?
He's been in there 25 years. Scalia, same thing.
He's a middle guy, kind of, more on the liberal side.
Yeah, and Thomas has been, he's 20 years. So you have Roberts and Alito, who are, you know, by Supreme Court standards, relatively young.
Yeah.
But you've got two of the conservatives who are getting on, getting quite on, and then the swing justice, Kennedy, who's also getting on. So, you know, there is real vulnerability with that five votes. So that's something that we really have to focus on for 2016. The courts are just critical for us.
You're right.
And
all the appellate courts, things like that, too.
Yeah,
but
yeah, and then,
exactly.
I mean, you know, if you know, given the monarchical nature of the presidency these days, it seems like once you get in, you're good for 8 years. So if a Democrat wins in 2016, that's 8 years of being able to do the Supreme Court and all the lower courts. I mean, that, you know, they could inflict a lot of damage unless we're fortunate enough to have a Congress that just fights tooth and nail on nominations, and that is something we will get an indication of this coming year. So,
you know what I'm looking forward to is hopefully, I mean, it would not take a lot to paint Barack Obama's veto after veto after veto as obstructionist, right? I mean, you would think. Because now he's going to become the obstructionist.
Well, that may be, but, you know, again, it has to do with how the media plays it and the skill of the conservative movement in bypassing the media. So, you know, we will all have our work cut out for us in the coming year, and we're just going to have to see how the new Congress performs. And that kind of,
they should present him. They should just have a litany of things lined up to put on his desk week after week after week, and have press conferences, even, you know, covered by bloggers, which is now becoming more of a formidable force at least. But just show time and again. Here's another one. He's vetoing it.
There are things that we can do, but, you know, it takes leadership on the part of the Republicans in the House and Senate. So we will see.
And that's what worries me.
You know, Rich, as we're approaching the end, and I wanted just to make a note about the presidential campaign season is starting, and of course the lead role is going to be played by Hillary Clinton. She has to campaign as the un-Obama while explaining away her time in his administration, and she has to maintain ties with the Obama people, even though the Obamas and the Clintons and their respective followers loathe each other, and they probably consider themselves as little better than enemies. So we're going to see a fascinating spectacle. So to go out, I'm going to play a tribute to Hillary Clinton. Rich, thanks for calling. Thanks for all of our guests who came in. And here's a tribute to Hillary Clinton's presidential run. And, Rich, I'll catch you guys on Friday.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, man.
Happy New Year.